You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Disease Du Jour podcast. I'm your host, Carly Sisson, and in this episode, I spoke to Dr. Lori Lawrence about performance horse nutrition. This episode of Disease Du Jour is brought to you by Equithrive. Dr. Lawrence is a professor of equine nutrition in the University of Kentucky's Department of Animal and Food Sciences. Her research interests include nutrient requirements of broodmares and foals, nutrient requirements of exercising horses, equine digestive physiology, pasture and forage utilization, and equine exercise physiology. Thank you, Dr. Lawrence, for joining us.
Happy to be here.
When we talk about a balanced diet for a horse, what does that mean for a nutritional standpoint? And how does that definition change when we're talking about performance horses specifically?
That's a really good question. The word balanced, I think we often think about having appropriate nutrients in the diet that go along with whatever the horse's requirements are. And so basically all horses pretty much require the same nutrients, but performance horses definitely require them in, say, different amounts than maybe a lactating mare or a growing horse. So when we think about the performance horse, we should be thinking about things like, well, what would be going up for this horse? What nutrient might they be using more of or need more of, or what perhaps might be something that they don't need as much of. So for example, I think we would say compare the performance horse with, say, a lactating mare. If we think about calcium, the lactating mare puts a lot of calcium in her milk, so she has a higher calcium requirement than the performance horse would. So we can just think about some of those things and try to line up the horse's requirements with what's in the diet. Probably the hardest part is deciding what the horse's requirements are, because it's really kind of hard to, with the performance horse, actually try to classify them into different groups. So are they really hardworking? Are they light working? Where are they in that sort of continuum of performance?
Yeah, that makes sense. And sometimes I think owners maybe don't always classify their horses accurately either.
Oh, definitely. And I think even with horse professionals, most horse professionals, whether they're trainers or farriers or veterinarians, they are usually most familiar with small group or type of horse. So maybe they do mostly hunters and jumpers, or maybe they do mostly Western pleasure type horses. And so if they have to sort of step outside that category and look at another horse, I think sometimes it's sort of hard to interpret that. I always, when folks talk to me and they say, you know, well, what about these? I say, well, this is what I would do. I would go to an event where you can see the best horses of that type doing whatever it is they do. And then one of the things that you should take notice of is sort of what is their body condition and what would be their sort of body weight status. Because maybe what you look at being desirable for your group of animals might not be exactly the same as what someone else does. So I do think looking at those things can help people sort of sort out, well, my horse should look like this, because that's what the best ones look like in terms of body condition, not necessarily conformation, but that can help people sort of focus more on getting the diet right.
Yeah, that's great advice, because another question I wanted to ask you is how these nutrient requirements might differ among horses of different disciplines and also horses of different breeds, because, you know, thoroughbreds and warm bloods are both commonly used in sport, but they might have very different nutrient requirements. So I'd love to hear your input on that as well.
Yeah, I think they probably have different requirements, perhaps not so much associated with the actual exercise that they do. So whether it's a warm blood that's going cross country or a thoroughbred that's going cross country, based relative to their body weight, what the energy that they're using and the nutrients that they're utilizing are probably about the same. But I do think there's differences during the other part of the performance horse's life. And so I often think about feeding the performance horse as, well, first we feed them for maintenance, just whatever their basic needs would be. Then we add on that whatever their exercise is going to be. And then we add to that what I call lifestyle. And so animals that, for instance, travel a lot. So if you put a horse in a trailer and trailer them for 4 hours to an event and it's a hot day, just think about how dehydrating that is, because they're in the trailer and you're going 60, 70 miles an hour. So there's a wind that's going past them to some extent. It's warm in the trailer, right? And then if you have a horse that tends to be a little bit nervous about that, well, that's adds a different thing on top of that. And so the horses that, if they're good shippers and they're comfortable wherever they go, they tend to have, lifestyle needs that maybe are less than the horses that are, oh, we're in a new place, I'm really excited.
Right.
And so I think those are some of the things that, we oftentimes, we think about the actual event thing, but the lifestyle is pretty important too.
Right. Yeah. And every horse is so individual with those requirements.
Yep. Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by Equithrive. Electrolyte balance is essential for hydration, muscle function, and thermoregulation in horses, particularly during training, competition, and heat stress. Equithrive electrolyte pellets provide key electrolytes in a palatable, low-sugar pellet, supporting consistent daily intake or remaining metabolic-friendly for easy keepers. Designed to support normal sweating, fluid balance, and recovery, it's an ideal choice for horses in training or competition and in hot weather. Equithrive electrolyte pellets, because proper hydration drives performance. Use promo code DUJOUR, that's DUJOUR, to get 20% off your first order, plus free shipping at equithrive.com. So what are some of the energy sources that you think we should be prioritizing in our performance horse population?
I'm sure pretty much any nutritionist that you would talk to would say, well, let's talk first about forage. And so we know that the forage component, whether it's hay or pasture or some other component that we might use like cubes or something, we know that that's really important. And it's important for a variety of reasons. One is because it does provide calories to the horse, and especially when we use good quality forage that is high in nutrient density. So when I think about quality, I think about how digestible that forage might be. So for a horse that's a high-level performance horse, an elite athlete, they really need to extract as many calories out of their forage as they can. So it needs to be digestible, and that means that it needs to have sort of a moderate level of fiber in it. So not too high, not too low, somewhere in the middle. The other good thing about forage that tends to be soft and leafy, if you're feeding a horse that has really high energy needs, is that they tend to eat more of it. And so the more of the fiber part that you can feed, the more that they will eat their hay. That means the less the concentrate you have to depend upon. And then I think on the concentrate side, you want to have a balance of energy sources. I do think that for most horses, having starch in the diet is still important. They still need to have glucose that they can transfer into carbohydrate that they can use for energy in their body. So I don't think going with particularly if it's a high performance horse, going with a low starch diet is a great idea, at least over the long haul. But certainly adding some fat to the diet is a way to increase energy density, a good way to get calories into horses that maybe have those very high nutrient needs. And I would say for many performance horses, I think one of your questions was about what are some of their issues. For many of the most sort of elite competitive equine athletes, especially if they travel a lot and they're moving around a lot, actually maintaining the body weight that you want is sometimes difficult. So getting them to eat and have something that's palatable for them is good. So I always think about starting with the hay component, and I always ask people, how much are you feeding them? And sometimes they have an answer that's about number of flakes or something like that. And I try to encourage them to think about, well, are they eating everything that you give them? And if they say yes, then give them some more, right? So as long as you're not worried about too much weight, I would do that, Forage not only, and the other part is that we know that the forage not only can provide calories for exercise, but we know that the chewing activity associated with the forage is desirable as far as gastrointestinal health. We know that the forage that goes, when it goes into the stomach, it can potentially create a mat that reduces splashing of the gastric acid. And we know that the microbial community in the large intestine needs that fiber. And so it's the place to start.
Are forage substitutes, or additives like alfalfa cubes, are those also valuable in the diet, especially for horses that maybe don't consume as much hay as we might want?
Absolutely. It's interesting that in some parts of the world, it's fairly common for people to put chopped hay, which they call chaff, and mix it in with the horse's concentrate feed. So it's a way that they get more fiber into the horse. And the other thing that it does is that it actually slows the consumption of the concentrate, so they have to chew it more carefully. So it lengthens out the meal time. And we can use basically hay cubes. Here we don't have a lot of chaff, but you could. You can use hay cubes basically to do the same thing. And so the only thing that I would comment on would be that you probably, if you're using it as a hay substitute, so if you're trying to, if you're having a hard time getting, you know, clean, nice hay to feed, and you say, well, okay, I'm going to add in some cubes, probably pick the cubes that are the larger size ones that are maybe an inch or so, or 2 inches in length, because we think that particle size in the horse's GI tract is probably important. So the ones that are just pelleted, that's a very small particle size. It's actually the pelleted ones that are very small. That particle size is actually smaller than what the average particle size of the ingesta in the horse's GI tract is. So I would go with the larger cubes to do that.
Okay, interesting. Where does the science currently land on protein recommendations for these performance horses?
Yeah, I think let me start at the beginning and say, so protein is a big term. We measure protein in the diet by measuring just the nitrogen content. The reality is that the most important part of the protein are the individual building blocks. So every protein is made up of a chain of amino acids, and the amino acids are really the important parts. And so protein in total is important. You have to have enough, but what you really need to have are the right kind of amino acids. So I think today we think more about meeting the horse's amino acid needs than just maybe directly meeting protein needs. Now, having said that, we also need some protein that is not absorbed by the horse's GI tract, surprisingly. So we need some protein that doesn't have to be really high quality that can make its way to the hindgut because the microbes need it. So we should also think about we're feeding the horse's body amino acids, but we're also feeding that microbial community in the hindgut. So they have to have some nitrogen because they use it for themselves. So having said all that, we know that, again, if we contrasted, say, the lactating mare versus the performance horse, the lactating mare puts a lot of protein in her milk. She has way higher protein needs than the exercising horse would have. So I think the people have had different points of view. Most performance horses don't need a lot of protein, but they need protein that's got this good array of amino acids. So when we look at a diet, we look to see if there's some sort of protein source that's an ingredient that we know has good quality amino acids in it or good quality protein. So for instance, just as an example, corn is relatively low in protein, but it's also doesn't have a very good array of amino acids. On the other hand, soybean meal, which is high in amino acids, has a very high quality or good array of amino acids. So we don't have to feed very much of it to meet the protein needs, and you get all the right amino acids. So we kind of look at those things on the ingredient list and see what the horse is actually consuming from that standpoint.
Okay.
Yeah. And I guess I could say that, you know, typically a performance horse, if you're buying a performance horse concentrate, for the most part, they are typically somewhere between 11 and 14% crude protein. That's usually when you look at them. You might find some that are 10, but generally that's the range. They don't typically go up to 16 or 18 because those horses just don't need that much.
Okay. So if you're feeding a performance horse feed at the recommended amount on the label, you're probably getting your horse in the right range of what's required.
I would say so. Of course, it's going to depend too on the forage. So if you happen to be feeding a very mature grass hay, so a grass hay that's got big seed heads in it and thick stalks, it might be very low in protein. So when you do that, instead of buying maybe an 11% crude protein, maybe you want to go to the 13 or something like that, depending upon you want to complement those and have them. That's the balancing part, right?
Yeah.
Put the two feeds together that complement each other.
Okay, great. Are there any other nutrients that are important to the performance horse's diet that you think we should discuss?
I think, yes, for sure. We have, I think, learned a lot in the last, 30 years about some of the nutrients that are associated with inflammatory and anti-inflammatory and recovery responses. And so, for instance, we should always be aware of how much vitamin E the horse is getting. We know that when we use stored hay, that we know that fresh pasture grass is pretty high in things like vitamin E, but when we take them away from the grass and they're getting stored feeds over a long period of time, the stored feeds tend to be, stored hay tends to be much lower. And so certainly thinking about those types of nutrients is important. I think we should always think about that. Anytime we can get a performance horse and perhaps provide them with some fresh pasture, we think that's a good thing, because then you're getting, you know, the vitamins in their natural form that are highly available, and they're usually in relatively high quantity. So for sure, vitamin E would be one of those that I would be thinking about. The other vitamin that I think is really interesting in human medicine, there's been a lot of interest in vitamin D. And so forever, we have thought vitamin D was basically, you know, kind of a one-trick pony, that it was involved in bone development and all that sort of stuff, and that if you were out in the sunlight, you probably got plenty of it. But today, we know that from human medicine, that it has many other roles as well. And it also has some roles in the inflammatory response. And so I think it would be nice for us to have more research on that in horses, but there are some places that are starting to study that. And so I think we'll be hearing more about that. A few years ago, we did a survey of commercially available feeds. And one of the components of the feed where we found there was a lot of variation among feed manufacturers in terms of how they fortified their feeds was in vitamin D. And that suggests to me that there's a lot of uncertainty about what's the right number. And so I don't think we know the answer to that. We usually think that probably if they're out on pasture, they're probably doing okay. But there is some information coming out on that. I think in the next couple of years, we'll know more about that.
Yeah, that's interesting to follow up on, because I know a lot of horses don't have access to fresh pasture. And so it would probably be very important for that population.
Yeah. And especially if you think about horses perhaps that live inside a lot, especially in cold climates where they're, the outside season is relatively short. Yeah, more to think about those horses.
Yeah, definitely. What role do supplements play in the nutrition equation?
That's a really good question. I think it's very relevant to basically all types of horses. In my mind, I usually separate supplements into a couple of categories. So one type of supplement would be a nutrient supplement. So for example, a supplement that provides, let's just say, selenium, which is an essential mineral. Today, most commercial concentrates, let me back up a step. Selenium is an essential mineral. In many parts of the United States, our soils are very low in selenium. And so that means that our forages from those areas are low in selenium. And so animals grazing in those areas could be in a low selenium status. But on the other hand, most commercial concentrates today are well supplemented with selenium. So you can look at the feed label. In most cases, it will say how much minimum selenium level there is. And so if you're feeding a reasonable amount of a commercially fortified concentrate designed for performance horses, you're probably getting plenty of selenium from that. Probably don't need a separate nutritional selenium supplement, okay, at least in my mind. On the other hand, there are supplements that you might need under certain situations. So if you have a horse that has not very good hoof quality, your basic concentrate and forages probably aren't going to have a lot of biotin in them, but maybe then you want to go out and get a supplement that specifically provides biotin, because we know that some horses with hoof problems will respond to supplemental biotin. Likewise, if you have a performance horse and they're in an environment where they're sweating a lot, chances are good you might want to provide an electrolyte supplement, because the diet by itself probably doesn't have enough for them to meet that. But I would also say, keep in mind that their losses on an event day are way different than their losses on a day that you're just training, right? So maybe they don't need that every day, but maybe you need to think about that, especially in replenishing after an event.
How does the horse's digestive physiology influence his athletic performance? And what are some feeding or management strategies that we can implement to help support their gut health?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think, again, nutritionists have talked about the importance of forage and fiber, so we won't kind of go back that way. We all know that the horse has a relatively small stomach for its body size. The stomach is essentially a pass-through organ. There's not a lot of digestion that really happens there. And then they have a long and narrow and tortuous small intestine, just like we do. And then they have this large intestine that's kind of the big mixing vat where fiber digestion happens. So their digestive tract is interesting in the way that it's arranged, and also the fact that it has a lot of sort of twists and turns, right? So a lot of things can get stuck, I guess. So one of the things that we need to think about is always making sure that the horse has adequate hydration in their GI tract. So what does that mean? That means they need to have enough water to drink so that they don't suck what they will suck water out of their GI tract to replenish sweat losses. We pretty well know that. So we want to make sure that they don't suck so much water out of their GI tract that then we get an impaction or something of that nature, right? So we always want to make sure that we try to get as much hydration in their GI tract as we can. We also know that high forage diets typically encourage drinking. Generally, the more hay they eat, the more water they drink, right? So if we can kind of put those ideas together, that's an important thing. The other thing that I would say is that we do need to think a little bit about meal size and meal frequency. So for very elite horses that are getting a lot of concentrate, we should be thinking about dividing those meals up. If you think about a racehorse at the racetrack, they feed them very early in the morning. Couple hours later, they might go out to do their work. Then they probably are going to get another feed somewhere around 11 or noon. Then they're probably going to get another feed somewhere around 4 o'clock. And then in many cases, they'll get another feed with the night watchman later in the day, right? So they divide it up. And sometimes when people bring home a racehorse, they don't understand that the horse is, that's his schedule, right? Yeah. So he's looking for food early in the morning and expecting it sort of through the day. And we put him on a 2-meal-a-day thing. That's not really what they're adapted to. So the meal scheduling is important to think about as well.
Great. Do you have any practical advice for how veterinarians can translate some of these feeding recommendations, some of this research on nutrition, into strategies for their clients that work in real world training environments where, you know, maybe we can't always do everything perfectly, but we want to try to do our best?
Sure. Yeah, I think I often go to horse events where I wander around and I feel like I'm talking all about hay, but I wander around and I look at the hay. And I'm always amazed at the diversity of the hay that you see that people are using. And so some folks have something that looks like it's a, you know, grass alfalfa mix. Some people have alfalfa, some people have just grass. So I would encourage veterinarians to talk to their clients about the forage, both the type that they're feeding and the amount that they're feeding. Because I think it's the client typically focuses on the bagged feed. They want to know what brand of bagged feed should I buy, you know? And it's like the other part doesn't even exist.
Yeah. Right?
So, and the veterinarian needs to ask that question before I make a recommendation on a bagged feed. Well, show me what your hay looks like and let me look at your horse. And so body condition on the thin side, on the fat side, hay quality, then we're going to pick this complementary brand to go with it. So I look at it that way. The other practical advice that I always give is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So if the horse is doing well, and everybody's happy, don't change just because somebody else told you that they started using a new food and, you know, their horse loved it. You know, if your horse likes what he's getting, he's doing great on it, it's working in your arrangement, you know, don't fix it. So, trust the horse. If the horse is not eating his hay, there's probably a reason for that. So,
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Do you have anything else that you would like to add today before we wrap up here?
Just that I think horse owners and veterinarians do need to think about weight management. If you look at any kind of athlete, human or other dog, and you think about exercising, you know that excess weight is going to slow you down. It's going to put extra stress and strain on your joints. And so while we idealize sort of that horse that looks round, perhaps, we need to think about that as weight management. And then the other thing I would say is that keep in mind that every discipline has its own sort of best weight range, and every individual horse has that. So if you can sort of identify that, you know, what the horse looks like when they're at their best, and today, days and age, you can just take a picture of them, really, and identify that and then try to focus on that. I think that gives you a really good practical marker and realize that, you know, this athlete isn't exactly the same as that athlete, and you need to tune it up to fit that individual horse and their individual event.
Yeah, that's great advice. I also find taking photos really helpful for monitoring the horse over time, you know, taking them periodically and just looking.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again, Dr. Lawrence, for joining us and having this conversation. I really appreciate your time.
Been fun. Thanks.
Thanks. I'd like to say thank you again to Dr. Lawrence for joining us, and thank you to Equithrive for supporting this episode. And as always, thank you to our listeners for tuning in to Disease Du Jour. If you have any questions or suggestions for the podcast, please send me an email at csisson@equinenetwork.com.